Hello, everyone. Welcome to the eTech Leadership Table. This is a podcast where we invite you to pull up a chair, grab a cup of coffee, and join us as we tackle some remarkable discussions on everything leadership. I'm Melissa Wood. I'm your host. I'm the Dean of Leadership Development at eTech Global Services. Welcome back to the eTech Leadership Table. You guys will see me grinning from ear to ear today because I have a guest here that I'm just like, you ever geeked out when you meet somebody because you know, like, they love what you love and they do what you do? So that's kind of where I'm at today. I am want to introduce you guys to the infamous Mr. Alex Trimble. And let me just say a few things. I know, Alex, you're going to be like, oh, so much humility, but let me just brag on you just a minute, okay? So everybody get your little cup of coffee or your water, or your energy drink, or your bag of Cheetos, whatever you've got, and just pull up to the table with Alex and I, because here's what's going to happen today. Alex and I are going to talk, and you're going to get to hear two people that love leadership, sharing insights and wisdom that you can take away today. And this is about executive development. All right. So if you're taking notes now, the title of it is executive development. And you're like, well, how can Alex talk to us about executive development? Well, let me tell you. Alex, he didn't just study leadership. He was trusted with it before most of us knew what we were going to do for a living. At the age of 23, the early age, that was just a few years ago for Alex. The federal government handed Alex the keys to build their own executive leadership development program. That's not a coincidence. Listen to me. At 23, he was handed the keys to build and manage an executive leadership development program. That's not a coincidence. That's a calling on Alex Trimble. And if you will watch some of, if you'll go link his bio, it tells you all the beautiful stuff about Alex, his website. He's a famous podcaster. So you will be able to see that this is not a coincidence. It's a calling. And this man has had a genuine calling in the area of executive development. So he and I have so much in common. He comes from the outside and works on your executive development teams. While I'm at eTech, I'm working on the inside to build them. So together today, I think you're about to get the most powerful session you've heard in some time when we talk about executive development. So if your boss is not sitting at the table with you, you better go grab them because they need to listen today. Alex is also a founder and CEO of GPS Leadership. GPS, that means without it, you don't know where you're going. He's a best-selling author. I think, Alex, I studied that you had 4 books. You have...
Yes.
Oh, stop it. Okay.
I know. I got to stop. I should okay. stop.
Okay. No, don't stop. But I have the 2014, the GPS Guide to Success. Then I had the 2019, Reaching Senior Leadership, the 10 Growth Strategies. And then in 2023, Relationships That Work, which is chef's kiss. Chef's kiss.
You're awesome.
the advocates, the supporters, and the detractors. We'll talk about that later. And then... So am I missing one before leadership sucks?
So it's the unlocking the executive advantage.
Unlocking the executive advantage.
And that was that one was actually designed specifically as a workbook because what we'll talk about today is like there's a lot of motivation and nice flowery things out there. But if people don't actually do anything, it doesn't matter. So we designed the workbook specifically to walk people through how to build the correct relationships to help you and your organization reach your goals. And it's a super simple process.
Oh, I love, okay. I'll get my hands on that one for sure, Alex. And then breaking news, if you didn't hear me, I already said it, but I gotta say it again. Like it's the coolest title I've ever had seen. And it says leadership sucks sometimes. And so you guys better get your hands on that. So I've got a few questions for Alex. I hope that all of you are listening. Again, if your boss is not with you, get them. You had time now to get them and bring them to the leadership table with us. And if they refuse to come, if your executive refused to come to this table, we've recorded this podcast. You can send it to them, right? And if you know they really need help, then go to Alex's link and he will come to you and help your executive. And if you're an executive listening, buckle up. This is about to be something to go. So Alex, I want to thank you first for taking your time to be on the eTech Leadership Table. Jim Ioub is such a personality, and he introduced you and I together. So I'm so fortunate for that. And I'm sorry he couldn't be here today, but I'm sure he'll watch this one as well.
We have to have so much fun today that he feels jealous.
Well,
and
already we're going to. So that's good. I love when Jim feels jealous. Let's rub it in a little bit. How about it? Let's rub it in. Okay. So if we're talking about executive development, that's our key topic and how it relates to the CX industry. So here's my questions. Everybody, get your pen, get your paper, get ready for this. How does executive behavior directly shape CX, even when the leaders are removed from the day-to-day operation?
That's a really great question. And before we get into this, I just want to just really quick call out, I love your energy. You and I have the same energy. So this is wonderful.
Hold on. Before you answer that question, I told you, I've watched one of your podcasts. Now, I'm not going to, because you said it on a podcast, I think it's okay to say here. And I know you got your jacket on, but I believe there's a tattoo that says calmness on one side and chaos on the inside.
Oh, my God.
Stop it. So I'm hoping that those two together form this energy that we get to see today.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. And to address your question, I think the perfect example is anyone remember the story about how Amazon had to fix their customer service issue? Long story short, they kept getting complaints, and CEO of Amazon, Bezos, was in the room, and his execs was there, and they were talking about it, and they kept explaining away, like, "Hey, look, now it's this, it's that, it's all those different things." And then Bezos said, "Well, how about we just pick up the phone?" And so he picked up the phone and called customer service. I think they're waiting on hold for like 30 minutes to an hour, something ridiculous. And he was like, "Yeah, fix it." The point, and one last example, my little boy is amazing. He is 2.5 years old, and it's really interesting how I tell him so much stuff, but you know what he does? What he sees me do, mm-hmm. right? So that's at the end of the day, that's what it's about. People can talk all you want. People follow and watch what you do, and that gives them either the okay to do the bad things and the bad habits that you're showing, you're displaying, because again, at these levels, you are never not being watched. I can't remember who I think it was one of the big execs at the organization, the conglomerate that oversees the Cavaliers. And I was talking to him, he's like, "Yeah, that's the problem. It's like you're always being watched." Yeah. And as a leader, we have to realize that and say, "Okay, what specific behaviors do I want to see throughout the organization? And if those things are really important to me, then how do I make sure I'm mirroring that in my behaviors so people know it's not just something he's talking about, not just some words on a wall, but it is something that he actually or she actually really truly cares about." And you know, I'll say this, it is not enough for you to walk the walk and talk the talk. You also have to be willing to do two other things. One is reward people who are doing it. Again, I love using my son as an example. Every time he does something that's so cute, my wife and I are like, "Oh my God, good job. Congratulations." And we're just giving him all the praises. And you know what he does again? He does it again.
Yeah.
He does that thing because he got the praise. He got the rewards. There's a million things to do out there. There's a million different wrong ways to do things out there. Why not make things easier and say, "Hey, that, yeah, keep doing that." Letting them know exactly what to do, it makes it easier for them to repeat that behavior. And then on the other side, this is those difficult conversations that we help managers and leaders with, is if someone's not performing, if they're not acting or behaving in a way that is in alignment with the culture or what we have decided in our policies, then you need to have one, a difficult conversation that is, "Hey, this is what I saw. How do we help you get to where we need to be?" And if those conversations don't work, then it's, "Hey, this is what I saw and we've talked about this and now we're going a different direction." But if you are not willing to address the different direction conversations, other people see it and they say, "Well, if they're not doing anything with them, why does it matter for me?"
Yeah. Okay, I hope everybody called. You gave raising kid advice and leadership advice all in the same answer. You know, you have to, I saw you put it in there. You took the personal and the professional and smashed it all together. A 2.5-year-old son, this tells you how old I am. I have a 2.5-year-old grandson.
Oh.
And you're exactly right. We were playing tractors with him the other day, and my husband, Gramps, got down, and he drove the little tractor, and when my husband backed up, he went beep, beep, beep. You know how you back up? I went to see him yesterday, and he's on his little tractor outside, and he starts to go backwards. What's he do? Beep, beep, beep. So you're right. I see what you did there. Like, we're talking about it in personal life. It's the exact same in professional life. What you made me think of is it's not what's on the wall. It's what walks down the hall.
Ooh, you should be a pastor. I mean, you may need to be a pastor.
It's not what's on the wall. It's what walks down the hall. And that's what you said. Jim, we don't miss you, Jim. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Thank you for that answer. I really rewarding the good behavior, right? Reinforcing it, like the high five with your son, and then not tolerating, because you can just, let's just say you do a good job rewarding good behavior. But just like you said, Alex, if you don't address the poor behavior, what you tolerate, you breed, right? So I think that's amazing. All right. Are you ready for question two? You ready? We can stop.
We're a little warmed up. Okay.
You warmed up? Okay. Where do you see opportunities for stronger executive alignment to improve the CX outcomes?
So, in short, so we work with organizations from Walt Disney Company to Microsoft and the CIA and so on and so forth. And so over all these different companies, what I've always found is there's really three things that produce this outsized return. So trust, proactivity, and productivity. Trust is fundamental. We can talk more about that. I'd love to talk more about that later. But if you have trust, if you don't have trust, you have nothing, right? It slows everything down. Activity. If you don't have proactivity within your team, then like, how long are you going to last if you're dragging everyone with you, right? Like, you're just like, oh my God. I mean, look, if you're at this level, you're at that level, there is some degree of effort and energy you can put forward, but everyone gets tired. So you don't want to drag everyone. You want to make sure you have a team that is proactive and taking steps and not only thinking about the first one, but the next and third and fourth step so that they are thinking strategically. The last one is productivity. And productivity, when we talk about productivity, we're talking about the systems and the processes that we have in place. And that is the number one thing I've been working with executive leaders with recently is, how do you create the right systems and processes to help your team be successful while that allows them to use as less energy and brain power as possible, because their brain needs to be focused on those big, really important things.
Yeah.
So how do you remove the, oh my God, really quickly, people always think that creating systems and processes always means adding. Many times it's removing. Mm-hmm. How do you remove this stuff? Again, those things that are not completely aligned where you're trying to go, how do you remove those behaviors? How do you remove those systems, the reports, anything that's not going to help you reach that goal you have as a company? How do you either add it in or remove it? I think that is the number one thing that I've been talking to leaders about recently, whether it be running their team meetings, right? Team meetings, we all know, like, meetings can be a huge waste of time.
Yeah.
They don't have to be. If you literally have a system to your meeting, everyone, and everyone always pushes back, oh my God, Alex, it's going to take me, I have to go through this. We have tools for everything because we believe that it's one thing to tell someone to do something, but if you tell them how to do it, you tell them why to do it, and you literally provide them a script to do it, as you all, I know you all do in the arena you do, you're talking to call centers and whatnot, like, you tell them how to answer, right?
Yeah.
You tell your teams how to operate, and it just, the first, in the beginning, yes, it takes 10 minutes, takes, you know, 15 minutes to think through and process, but then you're gone. You're to the races. You're not waiting. You're not wasting 30-minute meeting. You're not wasting an hour meeting. You're not having to follow up on something 2-3 weeks later because someone forgot about it. Like, there are so many processes and systems that we can put in place and, again, and remove things to help us operate more efficiently as a team. And I didn't say, and I really do, I love saying this. I got to say it. So when we say TP3, there's the trust, there's the proactivity, and there's productivity. And when you have all of those aligned, you then have profitability. Now, I want everyone to understand, when we're looking at this from an organizational standpoint, what is profitability? If we define profitability, generally speaking, it is what is left over after the bills are paid, right? It's what's left over after the bills are paid. That is important, right? If you don't have profitability, you cannot survive. You cannot grow as a business. Why? Because you don't have the resources to reinvest back into the business. You have the resources to promote people and or get the best talent. Like, you have to have profit. Okay, cool. And as a side note, everyone should understand, as I've been in this world working with these executive leaders and CEOs, you realize that profit is not natural within an organization. When you bring in additional resources, immediately someone has a great idea to use those resources for something else. So the only way to have profit is to be very intentional with keeping it off to the side and helping people find ways to get what they got to get done without the additional resources. That's how you maintain profit, and that allows you to reinvest in the organization, so on and so forth. Well, the cool thing about this is if you look at profit from an individual standpoint, what is that? What does that look like? Well, it's what's left over after everything is expended. That means after you've led your team, after you've been at home with your partner, after you've done the things that you have to do, are you burned out? Or do you have some mind space? Do you have some peace? Do you have some time for yourself to focus on what it is you want to do so you have the energy and the brain power to do those things for your family and at work? And again, that's not natural. It's the way that the world works. There's always things fighting for your attention. I tell people there is no such thing as free time. There's literally no such thing as free time. Every hour, every minute, every second of every single day is being used by you walking, sleeping, eating, in a meeting, commuting, whatever you're doing, it takes up your time. And so as leaders, we have to understand that if we have to have profit, we have to have space, we have to have energy to be able to focus on those new initiatives and so on and so forth, it's not natural. We have to curve off time so that we can have that profit to then reinvest back in us and into the business.
We are not in a podcast. We're in a workshop. Do you hear me? I'm taking so many notes here. It's crazy. I knew I would.
Don't play at me. If y'all want me, y'all bring me in.
I am telling you right now, the TP3 model is, guys, go look at this. And I love it's the outcomes framework, right? And so this is your model. Like, he's not just reading someone else's book and regurgitating. That's why I said I was so excited to talk to Alex today. This is a calling for him, right? The TP3 is his model, right? And it's the trust. So if you're taking notes, you better listen. Trust, proactivity, productivity, and profitability. And let me tell you my biggest learning, and you better have listened to this, all of you, not Alex. What you said about profitability, I rarely hear. I've been doing this leadership development for 30 years now. I've been in the BPO industry, and we all understand profitability, what's left after the bills are paid. But what you just did, Alex, you just shined a light on what's left of you after you spent. And I tell you what, that it doesn't matter how much money you have after the bills are paid if there's none of you left for a two-and-a-half-year-old son. What the heck? We are trying to run a workshop here. Y'all better recall this from a podcast to a workshop. So that is phenomenal. That is phenomenal. And I know that you could really go into trust. E-Tech is the same way on our trust model of being trusted advisors. And I love how I heard you say before, it's the domino. It's the first, if you look at those like dominoes, it's mm-hmm. the first domino. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about that. I think I'm going to add like 50 more questions. You've got to come back. Like, seriously.
Happy to.
All right. Third question. All right. AI is everywhere. It's in everything. Like, my son's building a house. He AI'd a house model. There's all sorts of stuff that you can do. I took a picture of my kitchen and had it looking all sorts of ways. Like, AI can do anything. I have my own avatar. It can say whatever I want it to say, you know, in any language I want. It doesn't have to have this Southern accent. It can have any kind of accent I want. So, given all that, this is an AI-enabled environment. What executive behaviors, because your gift is in that executive level, what executive behaviors become even more critical in this AI world?
This is something that's funny. I think I've been saying this for years. And really way before we even got into this AI conversation, but I still believe this to be absolutely true. I think that one of the most important behaviors is stopping. And I say that because the world moves so fast. And everyone is driving you to answer, to respond. I mean, and it's really easy to get caught up in that. But we all know, and the research shows this over and over and over and over, your best thinking comes from quiet space. We have the time to just shut things off and not even intentionally think about a problem. Just just going for a walk, just allowing your mind to go wherever it goes. I can't tell you, not only myself, how many amazing ideas and solutions have come from me just having time. So I'll just tell you, like, my team and I, we take a week off at the beginning of every quarter.
Okay.
And that week is meant to be, yes, a week off, and I hang out with my family and whatnot. I want to make sure I'm, because when we're in it, we're in it. But man, I have so many amazing ideas during that week because I step away from all the day to day, and I get to think about, shoot, I haven't thought about that. That's a great idea. I should use that here. Oh, I didn't talk to this person over here. So the stopping is something I strongly recommend. And I can't tell you how many, there's a, one of my executive coaching clients, we have to be very intentional with developing a quiet place for this person. Okay. And so I was like, so is there any places at work? They're like, nah, because I'm at work. Everyone finds me. I don't have time to think and just stop. I'm like, okay, what about home? Well, I got three kids and my husband did it. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, what, is there a place where you just have, it's just you? And she's like, the shower? I'm like, yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. And then it became our talk. Did you take a shower today? Now, again, we're joking, right? But the shower was code for, did you use that space to just get away? And so that's the first thing I would say.
Okay.
The second thing is the ability to ask critical questions, right? Because again, we all know that AI is going to create, it's going to create stuff like this, like, right? It's just, it throws out answers and data. I'm sure that any one of your team members who's utilized this technology will say that it can provide you a great answer. And then you say, huh, but can you tweak it here? But can you do that? Does it address this? Have you thought about that? Like, those questions help refine the AI's answer and create something that is specifically and uniquely able to address the specific challenges or whatever your outcomes you're looking to hit. But you can't do that if you're not someone, again, able to slow down and look and start asking really interesting questions. And the last thing I'll say in regards to behaviors is, we have to, especially in a world with so many people who are distant now, like distant from one another, like we have to be able to, one of the number one things that we provide to our clients right now are executive 360s. And I'll tell you, I hate 360s. The typical 360, all it does is they ask you, oh, hey, rate Tom on, you know, 1 to 5 scale and how great he is at communication, or rate Sally on 1 to 10 how great she is at conflict management. And then you get that rating and then you say, oh, wow, compared to the 15,000 other people, I'm here. Yeah. And what does this mean? Oh, Tom rated me high. I must be great. Sally rated me low. I must be bad. And the reality is nothing of that is true, because we didn't take the time to first assess whether Tom or Sally knew what effective communication or conflict management was. So we're just listening to some random person. So on that end, the understanding those scores mean nothing. And so that's actually specifically why we went and created our own 360 diagnostic tool to get away from that, because there is value if pinned the right way. So we're not looking for, we're not saying that these things are true about this leader, and we're not even comparing this leader to any 15,000 other people. Because again, that doesn't matter, because you're not in those different people's context. What does matter is, hey, I asked Melissa how she thought about my conflict management, and she said I was a 3. Shoot, doesn't mean I'm right or wrong, I'm good or bad. It just means that that's how she sees my communication. And if Melissa is important to me and can impact my life, my work, whatever it is, then I need to have a conversation with Melissa so I can better understand how I can increase my communication, at least her perceived communication to her. And those are very direct conversations you can have and you should have, but you can't do that if you aren't willing to invest the time to get to see how people see you. Because I'm gonna wrap up. I promise you right here. I was telling this. I was working with this group of exec yesterday, and it was specifically on communication. And I was like, "Look, here's the deal." I said, "Roger," I'm just making up names now. Roger, if I told you, "Hey, Roger, you know what? You could have done better." Roger might sit up and say, Alex, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. I said, you know, John, you could have done better. John says, he's always picking on me. Why is he always picking on me? And then I go to Trevor, and I said the same thing to Trevor, and Trevor says, Get off my back. And he flips the chair, right? He flips the table. The point being, you said the same exact thing, the same exact thing with the same exact tone to three different people, and they got three different interpretations. That means, again, it's not necessarily the words you use, but how they're interpreting your words. And you can only figure that out when you find out how they perceive you. Again, that's why we do so many of our executive 360s, is because of that problem. And opening, providing execs with that information allows them to be much more strategic and intentional with, oh shoot, I'm being perceived like this from my peers or from my boss or from my board member or from my subordinates. That's not good. Let me take some steps to change that.
That 360 diagnostic tool got me ding, 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 beep, beep, beep. I wrote that one down. That is there. You're right. It's the same question, three different people. It's that relationship that you have with them. How consistent they think you are, how trustworthy, what type of interaction you've had with them.
Can I make it even more difficult?
Yes.
And this is why communication is so hard. You said, again, I was in another workshop recently, and this guy said, I treat all my leaders the same, but there's some are doing really well and some are doing really poorly. Now, we do not treat all of our people the same.
Right.
We don't, and we can't. Okay. Let's say hypothetically you did. Even if you are wonderful to all of them, they still are going to interpret what you say differently because they're different people with different experiences. If someone just came from a supervisor, having a supervisor that was horrible and they couldn't trust them, then yeah, they're going to have in the back of their mind, oh, is he trying to get me or is she trying to get me? This is kind of what happened last time. Or if someone comes into a situation where they've overcome and all these challenges, and every time there was a challenging situation, it always ended up good for them. And they come into the same situation like, oh, okay, yeah, I know. All I got to do is get through this. Something good's going to happen. We have to realize that we only control so much. There's only so much locus of control that we have as a leader. And the only way to increase our influence is to, like you just said, understand their perceptions of us. Again, doesn't mean that we did something bad. It just means that this is how they perceive us. Again, it's not about what should happen. It's not about what could happen. It's not what's fair. It's what is true. What is the reality? And now that you have reality, you can actually build a complete strategic plan to influence and better lead in those situations.
Now you're talking like a doctor.
I am a psychologist.
I already know this. So, you know what I started thinking about, like, I know you're looking for patterns as a psychologist. Like, you may hear Melissa say one thing, and John and Sally and Trevor, and then they all have their different perception of Alex, right? But mm-hmm. You're probably, as a psychologist, when you're coming in with those 360s, you're looking at a behavioral pattern.
Yes.
For someone. You know how you said, Melissa, you ought to be a pastor. Well, I think about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the Gospels. They're all telling the story. They all tell it a little bit different, but there's a pattern.
I
told you we didn't need Jim. I'm just kidding. Jim, we need you. For everyone listening, show Jim some love. He needs it. Okay. Well, let's, that is phenomenal. That 360 diagnostic tool, and you just got, you're like an onion. You can just like peel so much of information in here. Okay. All right. How does this is, you know, every company really struggles with this. And even eTech, we just had to do a reset button on the word clarity. How does clarity and trust at the leadership level influence frontline agent performance and overall customer satisfaction? Let me rephrase that in a Melissa Wood way. Does it even matter if there's trust and clarity at the executive level? Because these people at the frontline and our customer, does it impact them at all? And if so, like how?
So, I'd like to, if you don't mind me, share a real quick story.
I'd love for you to.
There's a guy named George. You know what might be his name out there. So George McDonald. He's one of my supervisors back in the day.
Okay.
And I started working for him. I've been working for him for maybe 27, something like that. Maybe 27, 26. I started working for him, and like maybe a month into it, he's busy, but there's a meeting that someone needed to go to. So he sends me to the meeting. He says, "Hey, Alex, don't make any decisions. Just, you know, go to the meeting and you report back to me." I was like, okay, cool. So I go and I sit in the meeting, and they're discussing this new information, this IT transformation they want to do. So I'm taking notes, and I come back to his office afterwards. I'm like, okay, here it goes. So what do you think? I'm like, well, you know, I honestly don't think it meets our needs. It's like a $6, $7 million investment. The time frame is not what we want, so on and so forth. And he said, okay. He leaned over, he picked up the phone and said, "Hey, yeah, we're not going to invest in this. Thank you so much." Click. I'm like, oh my God, What? What? You didn't check what I said? You're just going to believe me? And immediately at that point, I was like, oh my God, I have to make sure when I communicate something to him that it is as accurate as possible because he trusts me. I don't want to lose that trust. And so here's the reality is that trust has the ability to make things go faster because he trusted me. He didn't go and run and do different meetings, X, Y, and Z. He picked up the phone and said, hey, no, this is not what we want. When you have trust, things can move faster. On the other side, have any of your people ever been in situations where they don't trust someone, right? What happens? Your CYA, cover your butt, right? Or CYB, cover your butt. You're taking emails to legal every time.
Yeah.
Someone sends you a message, and there's many different ways to interpret it, but you interpret it like, are they slighting me? Yeah. Was that an offensive thing? And now you're I like to look at people are going to be upset. So a certain population of your people right now are going to look at me and be like, I identify with him. And the other population, like, Alex, do better. If you looked at my screen right now, I have a million tabs open.
Okay.
And so you must be okay with it because there are people who are like, stop that. Don't do that. So my computer was like messing up a few months ago. My computer was messing up. So I took it to the shop and they looked at it and it was really slow. They said, hey, you have 30 tabs open. And I was like, oh yeah. And they, hold up. You have another window and with another 30? I'm like, yeah, I just don't want to forget stuff. They said, well, that's the problem. That's the problem. You have all these tabs running. And what happens is because all the things are running in the background, it slows down the system, right? It just slows down how it operates. The same thing works with our brain. If we're trying to operate in this world, but we have all these different ideas and thoughts going on in the back of our head. Can I trust that person? Are they after me? And that slows us down. It burns cognitive energy and slows us down, causes us to make more mistakes and so on and so forth. So again, whether it's at the executive level or at the ground level of customer led or customer front level, that trust trickles down. I'm slowing things up here, it only trickles down. It only gets slower down there. And because you know what? When the person who's customer facing has to do something and they're like, I don't know if my manager's going to trust me on this. Instead of addressing the customer's problem, I'll get back to you. Can I circle back around? Can I get back to you? And then you ask your manager and your manager's like, I'm not sure. Let me ask my manager. And it just keeps going up. And how much time is it taking to solve that problem that maybe could have been solved right there? Exactly.
And we don't really pay attention. So if those of you are listening here, when your company or if you're the CEO of your company or the business leader, if you think trust is what they used to call a soft skill,
no.
You're messed up, right? Hmm. Let's just say this to what you're saying. Like I'm 100% on board with you on this one, right? We've invested everything we have. We've put everything in that being a trusted advisors to our peers, to each other, and to our clients. And that's what we want our agents to be to our customers. Big question here is, if you don't have trust in a marriage, you don't have a marriage.
Mm-mm. Why are you going to be together?
Why don't we be together? If you don't have it's not productive. It's not healthy. It's damaged. If you don't put the emphasis in trust in your business, it's not healthy. It's not a business. You all are just playing. You're playing work. You're playing work. It's not work.
Can I ask someone on top of that now?
Yes.
Can you talk about the marriage piece? Okay, so you have a marriage and there's no trust between you. And you have two people, let's just say it's two people who are very, I'm not sure the word, I've been married for so long now, I'm not even sure what the word is, but they're very eligible to get other people. Like other people are very attracted to them, right?
Yeah.
How long will they stay in that marriage? There's a good chance they may just leave, right? Because why? If you have someone who thinks they have no chance of finding someone else, maybe they'll stay around because they don't think they got options. But someone who has options will leave. The same thing for the organization. Do you think you're keeping your highest performers in an organization where they have to look over their shoulder all the time? No, they'll go somewhere else.
That's it. You tell them, Alex. Tell them again.
I'll tell you, to your point, like you said, this is not a soft skill. At the end of the day, I'm a little risque sometimes, but I'll say this. No one cares about what you think. No, not how smart you are. Like, you could have the biggest title. You could have the coolest whatever. No one cares what you think. Why? Because they don't know what you're thinking. They're not mind readers. All of this comes down to behaviors. Are you saying and doing the appropriate things that are going to increase and or decrease trust within your team, within the relationships that are important to you, with your clients, whatever it might be? And so because they are behaviors, there are things that you can train behaviors, right? And so that's why even for us, when we're working with leaders who are trying to increase trust within their organization or within their team, like we literally have scripts. Say this. Ask this, now do this. And they find, oh my God, this works so well. Yes, because we've spent a lot of time and energy creating these scripts so that people can build trust and not be so worried about, oh, may I just do some random things? And yeah, do you like it? Like, no.
That's good. We're in a call center environment, a BPO environment. And like you said that earlier in one of your answers to the questions about we give scripts, we give job aids. Some of our programs don't have specific strips. They have like a job aid kind of gets you around. Mm-hmm. A lot of leadership development programs, they teach the theory of it. But what you're saying is you're coming in and say, Melissa, start saying this the next 90 days. Start doing this the next 90 days. And that's, I don't go to the gym and they just say, just go for it, girl. Just go for it. No, we're trying to go and tone different parts of the muscle.
Yes.
That's what you're doing with that. Beautiful. I'm telling you what, you need to stay right here and don't leave. Okay. I have one more question for you I guess I can get criminal charges if I hold you hostage. So I'm going to have to. I can't hold the psychologist hostage. Okay. I know you got stuff to do.
I'll talk my way out of it. Don't worry.
Okay. All right. Good. What does it take to build an executive culture? You talked a lot about trust, but now we're talking about the whole executive culture where trust, speed, and accountability and technology, they all work together. So your final words on this, what does it take to build?
Think. So. I think I'll answer like this. I think that anyone who tells you they have the answer to that question is blowing smoke.
There you go.
And I say that because every organization, every leadership team, every individual, every industry is a bit different. Everyone has a bit of a slightly different circumstance they're dealing with. Sometimes profits are high, low, turnover is high, low, people are engaged, not engaged. I have experience doing X, Y, and Z. I don't have experience doing X, Y, and Z or A, B, and C. So the reality is that it's really hard. And no one should ever say, I have the answer. What I can say is that there is a proven structure for addressing this. And this is what we do in everything we do, whether it's our executive coaching or our workshops and retreats, whatever. It's the same exact process. The first is assess. So phase one is always assess. So before you go into anything, you need to understand what's working, what's not working, what are the perceptions. Again, you could have an amazing operating system, but if your people think the operating system is garbage, then it's garbage,
right,
for them at least. But you need to know that going into it before you say, oh, here's the solution. And so we always begin, with an individual leader, it's always with a 360, our executive 360. With a team, is always a team or organizational assessment. Once we've done that, we can say, okay, here are the problems specifically. Not, oh, we want to do a leadership development training. It's, oh, wow, these people are having challenges because they don't trust their frontline managers. They're overworked. They feel like they're overworked right now. They're having difficulty with specific types of conversations. Once you've done your homework and collected data, now you can move to phase two, which is deliver. Deliver is the actual implementation of the training, the workshop. And again, that's how we phrase it. It'll be the same thing for you all. If you did an assessment on the front end, the next thing you would do is, okay, now we understand the data. How do we deal with this? Right. And okay. So again, for us, we're a bit different than most training and organizations, because again, we're really focused on outcomes. Like motivation is nice. Motivation is a feeling, and feelings are fleeting. Right. And so it may feel good right now, but did something change? Did we read our outcome? Yeah. So
in Texas, we say, did the fence get built?
Did the fence get built? We thought about it a lot.
We thought about it. We bought the lumber and the barbed wire, but did the fence get built? Are the cows still in the pen?
Mm-hmm. And so again, to that piece, in that deliver piece, yes, you are you're now addressing specifically what are the issues that came aboard. Okay, where are things slowing down? Where are they speeding up? Where can we afford to lay off a little bit so we can focus our energy here? Because that's the whole conversation you and I didn't talk about, which is understanding what is the most, again, there's a lot of important things to work on. There's always important things, especially at this level. Everyone has important things. But what's the thing that's going to, if you focus on it, have the biggest impact on the outcome you're looking for? And then you focus on that. But that's a whole nother conversation. So you not only now provide your team with the skills and the tools and the strategies to do whatever it is you're trying to, whatever outcome you're trying to reach, but you have, that is with a space for you also building the systems. So moving forward, we all agree we're going to do X, A, B, and C. We're moving in this direction. Okay, we've trained you on those things. Here are the things that we need to do. This is the scripts. This is what we're going to do. Okay, cool. Now, how are we going to hold ourselves accountable? And how are we going to make sure that everyone's working together? And you build in those systems on the front end. Again, everything we do in regards to and we do a lot of retreats as well, because again, focused on, we did one for Pfizer, right? And there's these big organizations and they have so much coming. Like, look, in a half a day, anything that's a day or less is really just, it's awareness. And again, that's something times awareness is really important. But if you don't have the time to not only learn what the skill is, train them on the tools, allow them the time to practice on the new scripts, or practice on the new behaviors that you've identified, practice, and then get feedback. And then again, not only there, you do the next piece, which is planning out the process. Okay, so every 6 weeks, we're going to come together. Every 2 weeks, you all are going to talk here. Literally building out those that system, that's the place you do it, because everyone's together. If you don't do it then, everyone goes back to their job because everyone's busy. So this is the place where you get, like we talked about before, carve out that space, that time, the resources for your profit. You carve it out there, so you do everything you can in that space, but it's not enough. Even that's not enough. You've done the front end. You've identified what the actual challenges are. You've done the middle part, which is focusing on teaching them the skills, allowing them to practice and building out the systems and protocols for as you move forward. But it's still not enough because, again, people walk into the real world.
That's right.
And things are going to be hard. And you're going to try something. And it's not going to work. And that was like the last piece we actually added to our process was the last phase we added to our process is what we call sustain. Because what happened was we would do the first two and they go out into the world and, they were really pumped. They were engaged, all this stuff. But then something got hard. They tried something, it didn't work. And it just fell off to the side. And we said, shoot, okay, so how do we make sure we can, again, we're all about increasing the likelihood of success. So what can we do? Okay, cool. So at 6 weeks, we check in with our team, whatever, who we're working with at 6 weeks. See, hey, what's working? What's not working? Cool. How do we make pivots? How do we remove barriers and so on and so forth? Cool. 12 weeks. What's working? What's not working?
Perfect.
Again, because, and this kind of full circle answers your question. Full circle answers your question is there is no way to do it. There's a direction. And you have to be willing to change direction once you have new data. As you're trying these things, you're seeing what's working, what's not working. Then you come back and say, okay, cool. This worked, this didn't work, and let's move this direction. So actually, in most cases, I encourage teams to not to look at many of these quote unquote goals as goals, because people think goals are concrete. They're crystallized. They're permanent. Instead, look at it as experiments. We all know that an experiment is meant to collect data and then change and go to a different direction. If you can communicate to your team, hey, look, we're trying this. This is an experiment. We're going to see what works, what doesn't work. And then we're going to pivot after that to make sure we're always going to be in alignment where you are and we're all trying to go. And then another piece, I'm so sorry, I'm just throwing so much information out.
I'm taking notes here. Keep it coming.
I thought about, you mentioned this earlier, and I can't remember which question, but we talked about behaviors. And you mentioned clarity at some point too. I'm a nerd, and my thing is words. Like, words really, really matter to me. And my wife and I kept butting heads recently over how we should be operating. And I'm like, sweetheart, I care about consideration. Like, that's the big thing for me. If someone's being inconsiderate, that's my pet peeve. Like, why are you taking up all this time in line? Like, move aside, pick what you're going to eat and come back, right? And so for me, being considerate is really, really important. For her, being considerate is really, really important. And I'm like, how we keep banging heads on this? We both think it's important. So I was like, sweetheart, how do you define being considerate? And she said, well, because my wife's from Burma, she's from Southeast Asia. She's like, well, in my culture, like, I don't want to ask someone a question that it's going to maybe put them in a situation where they have to say no and they feel bad. So my job is to think, like, try to think like that person. Say, hey, would that person want to attend this? Would they want to go here? Would they want this? And if they wouldn't, then I'm not going to ask them. I want to put them in an awkward situation where they may feel guilted into doing something they don't want to do. I'm like, wow. See, my definition of being considerate is the exact opposite. The number one thing for me is my autonomy. I really, really value my autonomy. Give me the ability to make a choice. I'll accept the consequences, but I want the choice. And so that's what I give to people I'm around. Hey, do you want to come here? Great. You do? Let's go. You want to come here? You don't? Okay, cool. I'm going. But I want to provide everyone with the option. So her and I are clashing because our definitions of this thing is different and we don't understand each other. So the same thing for teams and leaders. You have to spend the time to define the behaviors you actually want. If someone says, hey, I want everyone in this team to be respectful of one another. What does that mean? I promise you, if you have your team members write down what they mean, what they believe respect means on different pieces of paper, they'll all come up with different definitions. So you have to clearly define what respect means in your particular situations. In our organization, our team, people respond like this. We talk to each other like this. This is what's considered appropriate. Again, it takes time to think about it on the front end, but man, it saves you so much time, energy, money, lawsuits, cases. It saves you all those things. You losing your top talent because you're clashing over something that could have just been decided by, oh, that's what you meant. And so this is why, again, everything we do is extremely behavior focused, because if we can identify the correct behaviors that are in alignment with the goal that you want to achieve, all we got to do is get you to do those behaviors. And it becomes really simple. So I encourage people, like you said, reach out to us, gpsleadership.org/360, most people start, just doing the 360.
Looky here. Do you see all in it? I just went crazy on these notes. I want to link back quickly to when you said if someone tells you they have the answer, right, to be very cautious. Your 2.5-year-old son, if someone wrote a book and said, here's how to raise every kid you raise them this way, don't buy that book, right? That's not the book, because your son's different than my grandson, right? But what you said, I want everybody to pick up on, I don't want you to miss out. There's a framework that works, right? And I believe that you and your team have found that framework, and we're similar in a lot of ways at ETAG. Second, so thank you for guiding us in the assessing and delivering and building the fence, not just talking about the fence being built.
Yes, ma'am.
And thank you for the words on trust. You are phenomenal at that. Secondly, I've already think that you and I could co-author your next book. And it needs to be Marriage Sucks, But It Doesn't Have To. And we could make
you try
that
to get me
book.
In trouble.
I've been married 32 years, so I think I understand that just a little bit. So, but you're right. It's the same principles. How you were so eloquent in how you showed the definition of, you know, just being, you know,
considerate,
like that total different definitions, right? And that's the same thing in the business environment. Just like teamwork. What do you think teamwork is? I think teamwork is, right? So, man, that's a great way to start. It's some clarity around what's healthy and what's not healthy.
I can tell you 100%. We can run an experiment really quickly for your audience.
Oh, that's the other word I love that you use.
can you define teamwork for me? I'd love to hear, and I'm going to share my definition. I'd love to see.
To me, teamwork is everyone moving in the same direction to achieve a common goal.
For me, teamwork is every individual doing their job to a high level so that the other people don't have to do your job and they can just focus on doing their job.
Perfect.
Some people think teamwork is everyone helping each other. But some people think that. And like me, I'm like, no, let me do my job. You do yours and we'll do it at high quality.
Yeah.
And we all move in the same direction.
Right.
But again, I want to share something with you afterwards, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
you can feel free to share it with your company.
They
as
don't
well.
Get to hear this. Ha ha. You'll have to just tune in later. No.
No. It's called the, do you have 1 second to say one last thing?
Yes.
So It's the and all the work that I've done with the different organizations across the world and in different industries, I found that the organizations and the teams that function at the highest level, not just at a productivity standpoint, but they actually really get along and work together really well, are teams that are composed of fours and fives. So when I say that, what I'm saying is, a one might be someone who is like, oh my God, they're the worst person for this role, for this organization. A five might be someone, they walk on water, right? The best teams are composed of fours and fives. And so what we do is we help leaders. And I'll share this with you afterwards. We have a tool for this. We help leaders be very intentional with saying, you know, if they're seeing drag on their team, one, your fours and fives, your focus, what do I have to do to keep them? What do I have to give them? Extra assignments, extra opportunities, some mentoring. Hey, go to this conference. What can you do to keep these fours and fives? Because they're the ones moving the organization. Okay, now you got a three. Okay, ooh, wow, I got a three. What do I need to do to develop that person, that three to a four? How can I support that person to get them from a three to a four? And then you have ones and twos. Well, this is a conversation about how do I get them out the door? Yeah. If they can't get to a four, they're clearly not performing at this, again, at this situation, there's a lot of different things you can do and so on and so forth. And there's a whole process, right? We have HR process and whatnot. Yeah. But the idea is to get your team composed of fours and fives, because if we are all social animals, if you got a high performing team, like everyone's like, oh my God, I'm performing. Like we just keep going. But if you got, you know, they talk about it as a cancer. If you got a high performing team, but you have someone who's just dragging.
Yeah.
That impacts people. It impacts their ability to do their job, impacts their motivation. Well, why am I working so hard? And they're just, you know, kind of laying to the side. So we are huge proponents of creating teams and developing teams of fours and fives.
Well, look, I am Texas born and raised. You can probably tell you thought I was from New York with this accent, but you were wrong. That's probably the first time you've been wrong. But my husband used to, we have two sons. They're grown and gone now. But he would say, there was four people in our family, me, my husband, and our two sons. And he said, when you don't do your part on this farm, he said, think of it as a piece of pie. There's four things here that have to be done, right? When you don't do your part, one of the other three have to pick it up, right? And that's what you're saying. If, you know, let's make sure everyone's doing their part. And that's your fours and fives. I love the way you're saying the fours and fives. And especially when you have just a, you know, we don't have sometimes huge teams when you're talking about executive leadership, right? Mm-hmm. Usually they're a smaller unit. And when you throw a one and two in there, that makes a big difference. And then you could really disengage a four because you're letting that one and two make bank at their big salary and not pull in their load. And if you allow it, that's the culture that you're breeding.
And I know we have to wrap up, but you also, again, this is fours and fives across teams. Like this is up and down the organization, not just the executive level. Like look at the people around you. Like, and I encourage people, like spend the time to hire amazing people. Don't hire just to hire someone. It's just not worth it.
Now you stepping on some toes here, Alex.
I'm sorry. I'll wrap up. Bye.
Thank you so much for your time. You're absolutely brilliant. And when I said in the opening that it wasn't just a job you went to, it's a calling. And it's very clear in talking to you that it's a calling. You keep doing what you're doing. You guys go to his website, go listen to his podcast. It looks like everybody else in the world's listening to it already. And go read all five of his books, right? And be watching for that new book on marriage. And I will see you guys later on the eTech Leadership Table. Thanks, Alex, for your time. You guys, go out there and lead someone. Don't just talk about it. Walk about it. Thank you a lot.